want to thank those of you that came to join us for this very special occasion. It commemorates 100 years ago when a person, a being, with the ideal of unity alive in his heart, sailed on a ship to come to a strange land from India to the West, bringing a message of spiritual liberty, of freedom. That person's name is Inayat Khan, and we often refer to him as Hazrat Inayat Khan, Hazrat being a respectful title of the beloved one. And we also refer to him at times as Murshid, Murshid being teacher. So you might find that those words are used in this talk today, and I wanted to offer that as an explanation. Again, I want to welcome you, and I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart, for we are all brothers and sisters. Today, as we were told before the scripture reading, the subject is freedom, the path of spiritual liberty. The Sufi message is the path of spiritual liberty. And what is liberty? According to the definition in the dictionary, liberty is the freedom from control, interference, obligation, restriction, and hampering conditions. Liberty is the power or right of doing, thinking, and speaking according to choice. Those of us gathered here today believe, I'm sure, and live in the spirit of liberty. Unfortunately, throughout history, human rights and personal liberties have been violated, all in the name of religion. We can cite the following historical examples: the Muslim conquest, the French wars of religion, the Crusades, the Protestant Reformation, and the Catholic Counter-Reformation. Unfortunately, the litany of such wars is relentless. In truth, religious conflicts more often are the result of cultural and historical differences, leading to confusing impressions that the conflict is primarily about religious difference. I see people agreeing, thank you. You understand. We have an example of this in our world today, where acts of political terrorism are justified as acts of identified as acts of a holy war, the jihad. Misconception. Political terrorism is something entirely different. Our Murshid, our teacher, Inayat Khan, Hazrat Inayat Khan, brilliantly tried to circumvent misconceptions of the Sufi message and by the Sufi message as having any particular narrow association with any one religion by encouraging us to learn and honor all religions. Inayat Khan teaches in a body of teachings known as the Social Gothikas, the mystic, the one who has insight, says the explanation of the whole of religion is to investigate the self, The more one explores oneself, the more one will understand all religions and understand all religions in the fullest light, and all will become clear. Sufism is only a light thrown upon your own religion. Like a light brought into a room containing all things you want. The one thing needed was light. About a month ago, a friend of mine from Morocco, she's a colleague, we've worked together, she sent me a poem. Now, to give you a little snapshot, and I will say she's given me permission to tell you a little of her story. She's a very highly respected scholar. She works a lot with the Fulbright Foundation in Morocco, and she's been a distinguished scholar in America. She is the chair of her academic department at a prominent university in Morocco. And as you know, in many parts of the world, there are restrictions on freedom of speech, and people therefore use modalities of expression. For example, poetry, fictional stories but that have a historic base. And these convey social and political issues. But they may be viewed as subversive, too progressive, or threatening to controlling governments. My friend, in spite of all of her education and her professional respect that she's gained, she's worked for over these years, has endured great personal injustice and loss under the family code that was in place from 1957 to 2004 in Morocco, aimed at limiting the liberties of women under the guise of religious law. To give you an example, her husband, who was unfortunately abusive to her, could at his will dismiss her. She had no right to the children and no right to the family home. In some cases, the women and the children are put on the street. It happens that my friend had her career, but keep in mind that Morocco has one of the highest illiteracy rates in the world, so you can imagine the situation. So my friend, she sent to me a poem that was written by a Syrian diplomat. He was also a publisher, and if you're interested, his name is Nazar Kabani, spelled with a Q, Q-A-B-B-A-N. When Kabani was 15, his sister, who was 25 at the time, committed suicide because she refused to marry a man she did not love. During her funeral, he decided to fight the social conditions he saw as causing her death. When asked whether he was a revolutionary, Kabani answered, "Love in the Arab world is like a prisoner, and I want to set it free. I want to free the Arab soul, sense, and body with my poetry. The relationships between men and women in our society are not healthy, and I dare say that is somewhat true here in great United States of America also." At the top of this email, my friend, my Moroccan friend, wrote these words, "To meditate." And this poem, you may be interested to know, first appeared in a Pakistani newspaper, which is titled The News International, on the 21st of September 2008. And it reads like this. In a country Now, you know the situation now that's going on in Pakistan, yes, both from national disasters and political situations, or at least as they're characterized to us here. So keep in mind, a Syrian diplomat, the poem first appeared in a Pakistani newspaper. Very interesting as we read, listen. In a heart where thinkers are assassinated and writers are considered infidels and books are burnt, in societies that refuse the other and force silence on mouths and thoughts forbidden, and to question is a sin, I must beg your pardon. Would you permit me? Would you permit me to bring up my children as I want and not dictate on me your whims and your orders? Would you permit me to teach my children that religion is first to God and not for religious leaders or scholars or people? Would you permit me to teach my little one that religion is about good manners, good behavior, good conduct, honesty, and truthfulness before I teach her which foot to enter the bathroom or with which foot to, which hand to eat with? This is a cultural, and if you know about the East, you understand this cultural reference. Would you permit me to teach my daughter that God is about love? And she can dialogue with God and ask God anything she wants, far away from the teachings of anyone. Would you permit me to not mention the tortures of the grave to my children who do not even know about death? Trying to control people with what will happen in the afterlife. Would you permit me to teach my daughter that the tenets of religion and its culture and manners before I force on her the hijab or the veil? Would you permit me to tell my young son that hurting people and degrading them because of their nationality, color, or religion is considered as a sin by God? Would you permit me to tell my daughter that revising her homework and paying attention to her learning is considered by God as more useful and important than learning by heart the ayahs of the Quran without knowing their meaning? Would you permit me to teach my son that following the steps of the Honorable Prophet begins with his honesty, his loyalty and truthfulness before his beard or how long his robe is? Would you permit me to tell my daughter that her Christian friend is not an infidel and ask her not to cry, fearing her friend will go to hell? Would you permit me to argue that God did not authorize anyone on earth to speak in his, her name, nor did he vest any powers in anyone to issue, in quotes, deeds of forgiveness to people? Almost, but worth it. Would you permit me to say that God has forbidden killing the human spirit, and who kills wrongly a human being is as if he has killed all humankind, and no Muslim has the right to frighten another Muslim or another Hindu, Buddhist, Zoroastrian, Christian, Judaic? Would you permit me to teach my children that God is greater, more just, and more merciful than all the religious scholars on earth combined, and that his standards are different from the standards of those trading religion, and that his accountability is kinder and more merciful? Would you permit me? Signed, Nazar Kobani. In 1923, Anayat Khan made this powerful claim in a newspaper. It was a New York newspaper, and it was called the Detroit Times. His words: "Caste is forgotten among those in the order," meaning this universal Sufi order. "I recognize no caste, no nationality, no creed. We are all brothers and sisters, and in every man is the spark of the divine. Perfect international unity and harmony is our aim." This ideal, perfect international unity and harmony, is highlighted in our reading today in the New Testament. But we all, with open face, beholding in the glass, as in a glass, the glory of God, are changed into the same image from glory to glory. Even as by the Spirit of the Lord. Let me read it again. We are all with open face beholding, as in a glass, the glory of God, are changed by the same image from glory to glory, even as by the Spirit of the Lord. In 1926, within the last year of his life, Anayat Khan gave this visionary message over the American radio. A portion of that message reads as follows: "Beloved ones of God, the Sufi message is a message today being given to humanity. It is not a message of the East, but it is the message of the soul, the spirit. The Sufi message respects all religions, recognizes all scriptures, regards all prophets held in esteem by large sections of humanity, and is the source and goal of all. Wisdom is one." For those of us that may be drawn to this path, or just know that this feeling this message in our heart, we can contemplate this liberty, this freedom. And what's more, let us contemplate our responsibility, especially those that are initiates, in upholding this liberty. In the Holy Quran, we heard, "If your Lord had so willed, he would certainly have made mankind one single nation. But that was not what he wants. So we will continue to differ, unfortunately, except for those he bestows his mercy. And that very freedom of choice and action is the whole purpose of creation." In Anayat Khan's biography, we read, "When our ship arrived in the harbor of New York, the first land of my destination, I saw before me the welcoming figure of the Statue of Liberty. An idol of rock, which I felt was waiting the hour to turn into an ideal, awaiting the moment to rise from material liberty to spiritual liberty. Its wings suggested to me that it wanted to spread from national liberty to world liberty." Some of us, I hope all of us, may feel that there's no sacrifice that's ever too great in the cause of liberty. Anayat Khan had a daughter. Her name was Nurunnisa Anayat Khan. She was the last surviving member of the French resistance that had been parachuted over the German borders. And she died for this liberty, fighting for freedom. We know that being raised in this household with Anayat Khan gave her this spirit, this strength, this courage, this insight for liberty. She was moved from one concentration camp to another because she actually was melting the hearts of her captors. But in the end, those that are hardened by this ideal of a political power or a national power took her to the courtyard. There are eyewitnesses that saw her. She had been badly beaten, but she would not cry. She was asked to kneel in the courtyard, and she felt the gun being put to her head. And the last word she said on this earth was, "Liberty!" Kabir, the great poet of India, says, "Life is a field, and you are born to cultivate it. And if you know how to cultivate this field, you can produce anything you like. All the need of your life can be produced in this field. All that your soul yearns after and all you need is to be got from the field. If you know how to cultivate it and how to reap the fruit." Anayat Khan elaborates this point further, and he says this, If this opportunity is only studied in order to make the best of life by taking all that one can take and by being more comfortable, that is not satisfying. We must enrich ourselves with thought and that happiness which is spiritual happiness and that peace which belongs to the soul with that liberty, that freedom for which the soul longs and attain to that higher knowledge which breaks all the fetters of life and raises our consciousness to look at life from a different point of view. Once a person has realized this opportunity, he has fulfilled the purpose of his life. Have I gone too long? I have maybe dissenting opinion. I think I'll skip some. Murshid, in his own words, asks, "Is Sufism Muslim?" Because this is a big question that comes up a lot. And Murshid's own answer is this. "If the following of Islam is understood to mean the obligatory adherence to a certain rite, if being a Mohammedan means conforming to certain restrictions, how can the Sufi be placed in that category? Seeing that the Sufi is beyond all limitations of this kind. So far as not accepting the Quran, the Sufi recognizes scriptures which others disregard. But the Sufi does not follow any special book. The shining ones such as Attar, Shams al-Tabriz, Rumi, Sa'di, and Hafiz have expressed their free thought with complete liberty of language. To a Sufi, revelation is the inherent property of every soul. There is an unceasing flow of the divine stream, which has neither an end or a beginning. Again, in the words of an icon, those great souls who have brought the message of God to humanity from time to time, like Buddha, Krishna, Jesus Christ, Moses, Abraham, and Zarathustra, were all known as most learned men. But whatever they learned from the love principle. What they knew was compassion, forgiveness, sympathy, tolerance, the attitude of appreciation, the opening of the heart to humanity. What they taught was love, a simple truth. If religions seem complex, they've been added to. In any case, what the various prophets brought was simple. And it was expressed in their personality and in their life. It is that influence which has remained for centuries after they have passed away. It is not the literature they have left. Most of the literature is from their pupils. It is the simple truth shown in their personalities, in their lives. The error of this day and age is that we cannot understand the simple truth. The truth as it is manifest everywhere. Instead, we're trying to find the truth covered by a little shell. Wisdom does not belong to any religion or any particular race. Wisdom belongs to the human race. It is divine property which is inherited by humanity. And it is the realization that we, in spite of different nationalities and races and different beliefs and faiths, still unite and work for humanity in the ideal of wisdom. Life on earth has a tendency to drag us to narrowness. And therefore, we must know that we have continually that fight all along in our progress on the spiritual path. Remember that unity is strength, and working for unity of the world is greater strength still. Unity is strength, and working for the unity of the world is greater strength still. In closing, let each of us search within our own heart and ask, what is spiritual liberty? How do we live by this spiritual liberty? As we heard today in the Gayan, no sacrifice is ever too great to be offered in the cause of liberty. I offer this wish and prayer. May the authentic vibration of the Sufi message of Hazrat Anayat Khan inspire us constantly in pursuit of the truth of spiritual liberty and worldwide liberty. May the might of our unity, whatever our religious affiliation may be, in this pursuit be ever and renewably strengthened. May we forever strive to tear down the scaffolding of constricted beliefs in the pursuit of true inner, personal, and spiritual liberty. May we continue and continually be reborn into the aliveness and freshness and openness of spiritual liberty that can only be likened to standing on the top of a mountain where one has a very broad view beyond all blinding restrictions and limitations. And may each of you be blessed in whatever your service may be. And may we experience that message of Anayat Khan, which he put into three words: love, harmony, and beauty.